Glenn's got all kinds of money on my
way. Glenn already bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, 3 or 4 minutes.
And the following, but the following week after that is, you know, Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's nice. I thought we wouldn't meet anywhere after that. Oh. San Diego, Mayor of San Diego, COMM, Development Department. Hi, Judy. Oh, on mine, they... What's my reading?
Oh, are you
getting
on there?
Yeah, March 20th.
Somebody must have slipped up.
Any comments on the minutes at all? If not, let's turn to the agenda and see where we are and where we are not. The first item on the agenda is the interpretation and support of local community demands regard to education and full use of local public media and city policy, city police, orientation of new teachers for fall and community involvement, ongoing teacher liaison with community groups, local schools responding to local issues and community requests. May I just add that 2 weeks ago, when we had to postpone the dialogue session, with that time we're in the midst of looking at some school issues because of the situation at Lincoln. And most of us were involved in it on a minute-to-minute, day-to-day basis, such that at that time, we could obviously not be here and be at other places at the same time. Today, then, the agenda is related to the entire educational issue that we've been talking about here on an ongoing basis, and which we would have taken up 2 weeks ago, and which we had held a vacation for since January at Dr. Hall's request. I think it was in January that we stopped for a while and then were to come back. And we came back only once since then and were to have continued 2 weeks ago. And now we are taking up the whole issue of education again. And this morning we also have Dr. Connolly from
Donnelly
from Sweetwater School District. There were several representatives from the Sweetwater School District in the summer and fall of last year before we chose other items on the agenda. You're the only, you and your, the president of your...
Mrs. Bachman is a former teacher in the Sweetwater District. She's currently working with the Imperial Beach Community Action Council. Well, let me explain the reason for the sole representation from the district. We were under the impression that this was a San Diego Unified School District meeting primarily. And as I indicated, we have been working with local groups in our own area to resolve problems that we've encountered. And it's our feeling, and I think the feeling of people in our area, that our group should talk with community groups in resolving these problems rather than bringing them to the CIC. However, from the standpoint of contributions that we might make, the input we might give here, that's the reason for my representation today. I think, however, if we had been aware that this was a larger thing for the Sweetwater District, we would have had larger representation. We thought it was San Diego, you see.
That today was strictly San Diego.
Yeah, it says local community demands, use of state police, etc. We didn't understand that it was. But is this solely for the Sweetwater District?
No, now that it's solely for San Diego District.
I see.
It is covering the issue as before of education in our whole community. And we find that it's almost impossible to isolate San Diego because so much is going on in the immediate vicinity of San Diego that we see it as really a metropolitan area, the greater area. And our concerns extend far beyond the boundary, per se, of San Diego. And we also find that many who sit here or work in the different areas also work in and out of all of the systems that are in close proximity to San Diego. We're really looking at issues and how they affect the total population within our metropolitan unit. So it's not just San Diego. In addition, some of the staff members of several agencies, especially CIC, for example, spent much time doing the Mar Vista so forth situation at Castle Park, and find that it's like they are part of the whole complex here. We find that we really can't separate them. It's a total issue. The other thing you mentioned I think is important, but I don't think it's conflicting at all. Every district must, or school must, as we put it where, the agenda has it as number 5, must obviously resolve the gut issues with the people right there. So this is true whether it's in Sweetwater District or San Diego District or what have you. We are not usurping that at all. That must go on. But the issues are so big and so wide in scope that it's almost absolutely necessary to tie in all those that are involved in education. Any other comments before we begin? Does that tie in enough where we are this morning, what we're to look at, what we're to look at, and what we're to do? I have a correspondence here regarding the city of San Diego school. Dr. Hornback Hall will be unable to attend due to prior commitment. Dr. Hall's secretary called on 5669 Tuesday and said that Dr. Hall's calendar is clear, so he'll probably be there. Dr. Hall's office called back yesterday. Called back yesterday saying that he had a meeting to attend that was set up previous to dialogue. Mr. Donnelly will be present in Sweetwater District when he first. So, at this point, Dr. Hall will not be here. Called yesterday evening late to say that he could not be here. He called earlier to say he would, or his secretary, I take it, Susan, that said he would. Therefore, we do not have anyone. Anyone at all from the school district here? City schools?
Southeast
Development. Of course, Bud Reno is here. Southeast Development.
Bob Moss is going
to
be here.
Bob Moss will be here, but none of the officials from the school. Did any other call, or did Dr. Hall say any others would be here in his stead? Mm-hmm. So then the school district is not represented here. City school district is not. So at that rate, then, we have Dr. Donnelly from the Sweetwater School District.
You promoted me.
Mr. Donnelly from the Sweetwater School District. And of course, members here from this city otherwise. Let's open it up anyway, see where we go. And we're dealing with the issues as outlined, not necessarily in that order, but we can follow the agenda as it is. Did I read this one editorial Saturday morning, April 19th? You were waiting for Hornback.
I was waiting for Hornback.
School authorities draw the line. This is the editorial that Anderson is handing me. The editorial dated April 19th. Most of us read it. Most of us have commented on it publicly or had all kinds of meetings when people called about it. Has everyone read this or know about this? Who has not? You mean the city attorney has not read it, huh?
Well, I've read several of these editorials over the last 2 weeks, and I'm not sure which one you have there.
Someone who reads better than I, since now I'm losing my eyesight. Who's a good reader? Chuck, you're a good reader. Would you read it, please? We're ready.
Right. Education, not anarchy. School authorities draw the line.
Excuse me,
Father. The anarchy that closed several high schools and junior highs
in San Diego and disrupted classes and other presents San Diego with a crisis of the first magnitude. Despite specifics, the principle is clear cut. The school board and Superintendent Jack Hornback are insisting correctly that they are the duly constituted educational authorities in San Diego, the professionals responsible to the people. A growing number of students are directly challenging the operation and curricula of the school. They are young and impressionable. Their tools are violence,
anarchy,
and hookery. Disturbing ugly elements always are present in such confrontations. The technique used by the students is the same as that employed across the nation by all anarchists. Develop a cause, real or imagined. Trigger an incident at Lincoln High was a tardy student breaking windows and display case. Whip up emotions to fever pitch. Confront the authorities, submit a list of demands, some of which are ridiculous. Brook no compromise. The organization of the anarchy was smooth. It even included speakers from Lincoln High, the Eye of the Hurricane, actively working to set violence in motion at other campuses. Bullhorns, not a typical tool of high school students, appeared readily. And outside agitators joined the pupils in challenging authority even before the first dust settled. Fortunately, the San Diego Board of Education and Superintendent Hornback so far has showed good judgment, responsibility to their duties, and accountability to the taxpaying public. We will not be intimidated by those who would use students to shape their personal or political destiny, said Mr. Hornback. The superintendent should not yield to blackmail. Proper democratic channels exist within the administration and San Diego schools to discuss legitimate grievances, solve problems, and hear students' complaints. These are the adult channels that must be used. Under no circumstances should school authorities be coerced by violence and illegal activity. To do so would turn education over to any student who wants to stir up a riot, to those least qualified to judge educational needs. Today, the anarchy has reached the high schools and junior highs. If it is rewarded, the exhibitions will be in the kindergartens tomorrow, and to yield to the whims of juvenile emotions will assure anarchy in all educations for the future. The pupils of today's high schools are tomorrow's college students. To hold the line, the San Diego School Board will need the full support of the community. Parents especially should support the school officials and pay close attention to what their children are doing when they are not at home. San Diego is proud of its schools, and San Diegans will not have them used for any purpose except the common good in education.
Thank you, Chuck. That may be one interpretation, and looking at agenda, that may be one interpretation and support of local community demands. That is an interpretation of it. Is there any other comment on this in terms of number one, Ambrose?
I'd say, emphatically, in my mind, that item is a clear, concise indication of ignorance, stupidity, and irresponsibility.
I would agree to that.
It is a pack of lies. And people in the community who profess to want justice, freedom, goodwill, then they will not stand while this kind of thing is written. They will not stand for it. They will make every effort to put an end to this kind of bullshit.
Right. Any other comments on that? Louder, please. We don't have the mic up here this morning. It's down there.
Reading all of this editorial, incidentally, I didn't notice that there was a name attached to it. The person that wrote it, I didn't see a name of the person who wrote it. It was sort of a guest editorial, but these are supposed to be Dr. Hornback's words. And I don't quite understand what Dr. Hornback means when he says that they are the educational professionals for the people in the county of San Diego. And then just on the other hand, he'll call them these kids anarchists. and he's asking for support from the community. How can you ask support from the community when you're calling the community kids anarchists? It doesn't make sense to me. I think, actually, like I was saying before, this is an irresponsible blob of words, really. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not clear. The meaning is not clear as far as I'm concerned, because I think that the students had a legitimate grievance, in that they went through the proper channels, but they were neglected. In the sense, I think they thought that they were neglected. That's why they took these steps. And I believe that the students were justified in what they did. And one statement here that was clear, that the reason why the riot started, or the walkout started, because some kids broke showcase windows and broke glass windows out of the school. I think this is wrong. This is not true. Because this walkout was already planned before that kid was thrown out of school for being tardy. This was planned a long time ago, because this list of demands that was printed in the paper about 2 or 3 weeks ago was presented to the school board and the school officials before this walkout even occurred. This was not made mention in the paper. So I think that Dr. Hornbeck has made a great error in releasing this garbage to the public. I think it should be retracted.
I think we have to make a mistake, though. That's the San Diego Union's editorial.
Well, even the Fed, I mean, these are Hornbeck's words. And he should have been here to accompany.
Well, San Diego Union is known for taking things out of context.
Well, then he should have been here to back this thing up, to say, well, I didn't say it, or I did say it. And being the educational authority in the county of San Diego, the city of San Diego, I think Dr. Hornbeck should have been here to show the picture.
If they would print it.
Let me be sure, though, Andy, that Renis's point is well taken. An editorial is the license and privilege of the paper, and the position taken there is strictly that of the paper. If you are suggesting, however, that to the degree that the superintendent is quoted, number one, and to the degree that citizens consider even some of his statements a lie or out of context or distorted, then the responsibility lies with him then to in some way publicly declare
it. Right.
As long as you're saying that, we understand it.
Because I know that the cop is dope. He really doesn't give the overall picture of everything. Whatever anybody says is always distorted. That's making money for the newspaper. But I feel that the responsibility of the school board lies in this article. Someone from the school board should have been here to say either we agree or we disagree, so the community at large would know what position the school board actually took in reference to this article.
All right.
I don't think that this stage that it would be too wise to try to force Dr. Hornbeck into taking on the Copley Press. It seems, it would appear from those who are dealing with him directly, that he's coming across fairly well in relation to the kids. He's talking with them. He may not be talking to us in our feelings, but he's meeting with the kids in these schools, and they're understanding him, and he's understanding them. Maybe it would be well if we didn't force, I mean, did we really ask him to comment on this editorial here today? He could do it in a letter if you wanted him to. Let's not put him into an untenable position. He needs help at this stage too. He seems to be making more moves in directions that we might prefer than the previous superintendent.
I don't think that anything to Dr. Hornbeck should have been more important than standing and clearing up his position on the school issue, regardless of what was printed in the Copley News. His job is education. He should be the one to clarify his statement to the public and to the community as to where they stand and where he stands on this issue. And I don't think a letter from Dr. Hornbeck would suffice anything. I think his person here would mean more to the people that come to this dialogue meeting than any letter he could write on cheap paper. I just would not accept that. And I think that he should be here. I don't care what the Evening Tribune published about him. I think it's his responsibility as the educational authority, as he stated on that paper or was written, quoting him, should be here, or some one of his representatives to say, well, I think that the Tribune made a mistake. We're not challenging the Tribune as such, but we would like to give our version of it, and we want to know what you feel about it, and then we can work from there. But a statement like that in a letter wouldn't even help. I'm sorry.
You're raising another question. You're asking about support, and he's really talking about statements attributed to him having been to be clarified. So you're really talking about two different things.
I think we have to allow Dr. Hornbeck at this point, which is still kind of ticklish, to establish his priorities. If he's communicating and getting his point across to the communities where the schools are that are troubled by going into those communities and meeting with parents and students, that perhaps at this moment I feel is more important than meeting our needs here.
All
right,
Estelle?
Well, I think I'll pass on that.
All right.
Comes back to the old question which comes up all the time, and of course there were some false statements in there, or at least false implications. One in particular was the reference to the bullhorns. It was sandwiched in there in such a way between two sentences that made it appear as if outside agitators brought these bullhorns in, and the fact of the matter is two brief phone calls we found out that the only bullhorns that anyone could verify were there were one that belonged to George Hall, who isn't here this morning, and he'd taken it there himself. Another incident happened this week, and the Tribune reported a statement by the Administrators Association, and either through a typographical error or deliberately they put words in there that were not in the statement submitted. And again, we're back to the old question of the union and Tribune and the kind of reporting and the kind of work they do.
Let's see if we can clarify the issue so we don't get all confused later. You are saying that regardless of whether it's their responsibility or not, it's the other responsibility of the school board to stand up and say it's not so or clarify. And you're saying, if I hear you right, that it's the Tribune you're talking about. And I think he would grant that.
Yeah,
so I want to be sure that we keep the issues clear. We don't have to say with just what he's saying, but let's be sure we keep them distinct. Now, Estelle.
Well, going back to the issue of the paper, which is sort of they're intermingled, I think that we're making a mistake in allowing press all the time. I think that we have gotten to imposed on us that publicity and publicizing is the best thing for everything. I think now that I would have a tendency to leave the news, if something is happening, not to notify the paper, at least this paper, because the fragmentation and the distortion that takes place is more harmful. And I, for myself, if I found myself in any situation, would make every attempt to not notify the paper, not notify them of the news that is happening, rather than then notify them, because I think by at least this paper brings more harm on the minority community by reporting any of its activities than good. I don't think it reports them as news. I think they build in judgment in every single article that they do, not only in their editorial page.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true on that subject. That's very much. If we have less, a little more listening to what we want to say in the community first before we open up with stories and stories that are not true or against the minorities, there would never be this trouble. We would never have this sort of situation where we have to bring these people to write up stories that don't show facts. It's just all fiction. And then not bring in the fact that the fact is what we want is what they are not listening. We want our civil rights. That's what we want. If we don't have it, these people turn around to make it look like they're evil. So why is it? Why do we have this situation, Dean?
Glenn?
I wonder if we're perhaps missing a basic issue that the school has decided that this way of communicating with the community is unimportant.
Is unimportant?
Is unimportant. We can understand that there might be circumstances that would prevent Dr. Hornback from being here. There might be circumstances that would prevent Dr. Hall from being here. But it's a pretty large organization, and when we find that we have no one here, it says to me that they have decided that this is a topic that they are not going to attempt to communicate with the community through this group, at least. But as far as they're concerned, they are seeing this. It says implicitly to me that they don't see this as an appropriate topic for this group, and that they are through communicating with the community in this type of a meeting.
All right.
I think this opens up another issue and so forth, that when we do meet with a school district, they say, well, who do you represent? Are you a parent or a student and so forth? I think, and they can, unless you're going to that school or a parent of somebody that's going to that school, they consider you a outside agitator, quote. And I think they fail to realize that as far as minorities go, I know the way the Chicano and the Black feel is that education is one of the central issues that is hurting our community. This is one of the bureaucratic structures that is most hurting our children. And everyone has a valid stake in a good education for our people. And the school tends to think that we don't have any right to put any kind of an input into what they're doing with our children unless we happen to be a parent and so forth, and consider us outside agitators. I think this is just another divisive means to of not dealing with a problem. In other words, not dealing with a community. And they try to choose whom they deal with. And those people that they tend to choose are those that that are less threatening to their way of doing things.
If you want, if I might speak to that point, and I know the situation that you have reference to, and I hope that once again we would not fall in the trap of stereotyping everyone by what happens in one situation. And I think too that, I think you pointed out something here. We might as well be realistic and honest about it, that any organization, or if you want to call it a bureaucracy, is going to be attempting to maintain things as they are in pretty good order and so forth. And I think we're all threatened by situations that are going to upset, we'll say, the apple cart. And I think this is the area that we all need to grow in, is to understand that, especially in these times, there are going to be anxious moments and times of agony, and working with people who may not see eye to eye with them. But my own personal philosophy, and I'm speaking just for myself here, is that everyone has to be more alert to what is going on today and to be more receptive to everybody. And I know that we would hold that, generally speaking, parents who live in a particular community have a bigger stake in the school. But that, as far as I'm concerned, does not rule out others who may be of interest and have knowledge and understanding, dedication, or commitment to a particular thing, and who can work successfully or constructively with school. But my main point here was, let's not say that this would apply to everyone, that they would try to bar certain people who are not parents, or to narrow the area of discussion down to just a small number that you might say that they could work with.
Well, this always gets me. Now let me respond to Ward. Ward, you know, it all, you're always defensive, Ward, and I really love you.
That,
I've known you for a year,
okay.
And I really do care about you. Someday I want you on the offense, though. You know, let's face it, stereotype is what we've been, and now you don't want to be stereotyped. I think that's great, you know, because that's what we don't want to be.
I make this application to everybody.
But I think what you're saying is that, and bringing in Bill's point, when they'll say outside agitators, because there's something, a statement Hornbeck made today, which I think brings in your point, and I don't think he's understanding it as well as you do, about the outside agitator. The public school system is a community, it is a school system that belongs to everyone, you know, San Diego City Unified District belongs to San Diego City citizens. And if I go to San Diego High, and if I want the improvement of San Diego High, and even if I don't have children there, I think I have a right to give input into that. Because improving San Diego High improves the school which my children or grandchildren would attend. Because I don't think that we both, you know, I don't think it's a perpendicular world. I think it's a round world. And did I just discover something? Asking about it's perpendicular. And I think that this is very, very vicious, and it's very, very well plotted to name people outside of what? Outside of the United States. We're not getting people from Mexico coming up here and telling San Diego High how to, or you how to run your school. Outside of what is what always bothers me. They want us to be, they say, you're apathetic if you don't do community work. Then if you do do community work and you're within one block of that district, you're an outside agitator. So I want to know what outside and inside means when they use it, and when I use it, and when people that are asking you to work in community use it. So I think that we go back to definitions. And I think that we should have Dr. Hornbeck define his outside agitators. I think we should have me define my outside agitators. And what he means by outside, I pay taxes to the San Diego City Schools, to the city of San Diego, and if I don't happen to live in San Diego High District, I still have a right for the improvement of that particular school, or Lincoln, or La Jolla.
I'd like to also respond to Mr. Donnelly in the sense that I think that when I said the statement that it tends to, I don't mean only Sweetwater. I think the response was about the same in San Diego Unified School District. Another thing that there are certain people within the school district, like for instance, Ward, I found you to be more willing to listen than anybody else in the school district. That's your personal philosophy that you were describing right there. It doesn't happen to be the position or stance of the school district. Or many people in it. In fact, anybody else in it that I have met, I mean, maybe there's a lot of beautiful people in there that are willing to listen and have a very good philosophy and so forth. But I haven't met them. And I think if everybody had tended to have more your philosophy, I think we wouldn't be having the problems that we're having right now. But I do find that more people have the philosophy that I was describing than have your philosophy. And that's unfortunate, but that's the problem that we're facing.
Yes?
Yes, there's something I'd like to
say. Louder, please.
There is something I would like to say, too. I suppose I'm involved with a lot of these programs. I guess you're going to stereotype me as white middle class. There's a lot of us white middle class that have problems in the school too. Recently in the Sweetwater District, my son was suspended because I failed to send a federal survey card in. And I just think that, do I get it that someone was suspended or thrown out of school for being tardy? Is this one of the problems in Lincoln? Well, my child was suspended because I did not send the survey card back to school. And I consider that sunk.
Ward Dunley of the Sweetwater School District, are you taking that into consideration? Whether you handle it here or not, are you listening?
I am listening.
Beg what?
I am listening.
You are listening?
I hope you're listening loud and clear, Mr. Dunley, because I've spent 2 hours in the principal's office, which I fought him to the nail, and he needed his vice principal to help him. Take a friend and let him bring in some more.
It's not an equal match. However, in regard to the 874 car, which is the federal survey car, for which the district does get money.
That's the crux right there.
Yes, well, the point is, I was going to say that maybe I should talk about this, but ordinarily, you work with youngsters to get those in by a certain period of time, and in some cases, kids either are grossly negligent or they're. Just don't get them in within a reasonable length of time, and you move to more drastic measures then. So I suppose in this case, rather than being a suspension of the usual sort, you say, now you go home and get the car.
No, I have to take it right here.
Usually
Sean, my son
will say, take the car home, get it filled out, and then when you have it filled out, you can come back to school. So if he takes a day or two, then perhaps he is out of school for that length of time.
Well,
are you suggesting that it's not a suspension?
Well, ordinarily, a youngster takes it home, gets it completed and signed, and gets it right back to school because he's been, you know, he's got to this point.
That's ordinarily.
But now, if he doesn't come back,
have it over here.
Yeah,
it's just
as
far as
it's not.
Yeah, I'm trying to just clarify the issue.
Well, I'm not saying that it would not ultimately result in a suspension. It could do that. Depending upon the youngster's behavior with the vice principal.
Mrs. Bilko, that's the difference. You can threaten to see your lawyer. You see?
Well, really,
that makes you white middle class. Okay, but you can still see a lawyer. Now, the Sweetwater School District, as I know it, Mexicans are suspended, and they can't make an appointment to see Mr. Rogers or something for 3 or 4 weeks. So 3 or 4 weeks go by before the parent can make an appointment with so-and-so to talk about why they sent their son home. So in the meantime, then maybe after that he's either sent to another school, he's sent to a continuation school, or he's truly expelled or something. Or maybe he's reinstated. I don't know. But the thing is that it can be from 3 or 4 weeks, and there are kids in San Ysidro that are 3 or 4 weeks waiting for that appointment to find out why they were sent home. Mrs. Filko did it right away, but that parent cannot do it right away. She doesn't know anything about a lawyer to talk to, so there is a difference.
Well, there is legal aid, you know, and I didn't really have the $50 for a lawyer, and not only that, I was hot and mad. I walked from the beach over to the junior high school, and I think that's several miles, and then the principal had the nerve to let me know I took up his lunch hour. He didn't have any lunch. Well, by God, I didn't have any lunch either. I walked from the beach to the school and back home and worked 8 hours that night as a waitress.
I think a point of clarification, this is for 874 and PL 874 and 815 funds, that if the parents did not submit this, then it would cost the local taxpayers extra money, and that's why the schools are pretty
we should make a difference.
No,
I'm not sure that Mr. Rogers has ever handled an 874 case.
Well, no, but I'm talking about the idea
about two different kinds of discipline or
discipline. No, I'm talking about the educators aren't educating. They're playing policeman, they're playing judge, and they're playing jury.
Well,
and I think that what you're speaking about is double standard and applied in discipline. Discipline is interpreted in a different way when a white person comes to the school, and in a very different way when a Mexican parent goes to the Sweetwater High School District.
Or you want me to go on the offensive? Well, I'm going to have to categorically deny this, that there's a difference when a vice principal talks with a Mexican-American youngster and any other youngster.
What about when the child or the kid or the parent feels there's a difference? When he perceives a difference.
Well, I know what you're saying there, Joe.
We had a young man at an ad hoc committee that sat there the other day, and he said, and he's still very young, and his memory's still very fresh. And we happen to be a personal friend, God forbid that he should be a friend of mine anymore, of the principal that whipped him. Now, he wasn't from the Sweetwater School District. He happened to say this in front of some other people. The principal whipped him. Now, yesterday, a young man who I'm sure you would all consider very they wouldn't like him, said that you consider him an undesirable under your standards, probably, or I'm not saying yours, I'm saying collective yours, and society standards, has said that a Mexican mother should now go to the school principal and say, "You are my servant. Don't you dare touch my child." Because I've heard La Jolla mothers say, "Don't you dare touch my child." And that principal at La Jolla wouldn't dare put his hand on that child. Yeah. But that principal at Lowell put his hand on their child. And we're going to teach our parents to say, "You are our servants. You are there to educate, not to whip, not to do anything." And that's right. Mr. Davis is my servant. He is there to enforce the law for me, not to enforce it upon me. So I think that you will have to remember that categorically, you're not the long white Moses anymore. You are a servant of the people.
Can I say something along that line that happened in the
classroom? And then Ambrose.
That disturbed the school, the students. In fact, it was one of their demands. There are things that they were very disturbed about, as when they walked out at Castle Park, there happened to be police there, but not only police there, there happened to be the Border Patrol of the U.S. Immigration Service there. Now, they said it sure wasn't any student or parent that called the Immigration Service in there. Now, the school said they didn't, and then the kids got some information somewhere where the principal had called the Immigration Service. Now, I think that's using intimidation to a very high degree.
Let's see then, before I call on the Ambrose and the lady in the back, whether we got this cleared up. Ward, I'm handing this back to her that says the temporary suspension notice, failure to return federal survey card. I'm not sure that it's needed any further here, except that when you describe that he is told not to return until he returns the card, it seems to me it takes it out of what Mrs. Silico was saying here. She is saying, regardless of how it happens, and with a card of that nature, it is a suspension. And it seems to me you were saying, well, it's not really a suspension if he doesn't even get a card, or if he is told not to return, and he may return 2 days, 4 days, or 5 days later.
Is a temporary suspension. But often, when you reach the point where these cards have to be in, retabulated, and so on, and you want them in. So you say, this morning, take the card home to your parent and have it signed, and then come right back to school.
But I think this stinks when the other three schools sent home another survey card and said, well, maybe you forgot about it. I don't like this kind of tactic, and I told him that it'll be a cold day in hell before he ever gets another survey card, and that my kid would be back in school Monday without a survey card, or he could see my lawyer. So I was let known that he would be very, how would you call it? because I'm such a double parent, and he was going to be big and put my kid back in school, so my child wouldn't suffer for my indiscretions. And I'll have you know that the week that I didn't send a survey card back in, I and my husband spent 40 hours in volunteer work that week.
All right, do we need to carry that out? I think the point is that regardless of how it happens, it's a suspension, and she's reacting there to
well,
that.
It was a suspension yeah. in this case, no question about that. Separate suspension.
Ambrose?
Yes, I'd like to take another look at this, at the news media and the school's use of it, because here I think we have a situation that is bad, and I feel that it's obvious that it's going to get worse as we move along through the weeks and months. And the situation can do nothing but harm.
Yes, sir.
And the question in my mind as to whether anything at all can be done about it. I feel that the community, someone in the community, will ultimately deal with this situation some way, one way or another. But I think it is serious enough to warrant some serious consideration on the part of this group or some other group.
And you're suggesting that this is just the beginning of some kind of need for that, because this is going to continue and get
right.
worse.
Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that ghetto schools, the people in ghetto communities, are going to seek and get the kind of education for their children that they feel their children deserve. And there's going to be a continuation of this kind of activity, and the publications in this city have demonstrated unequivocally where they are. And nothing but harm can come of the way they handle the situation. And if we fail to see the harm that can be done, that is being done by the papers, then something is wrong with us.
I still can't go along with the union editorial being a thing of how the schools have used the paper. I think this is how the paper has used the schools. It gets just turned around.
Well, I think what he was making, though, should be considered with that. No editorial is ever written without contacting somebody involved.
Yes, but what I'm saying, Carol, is that I don't... the editorial in the union, which I'm blatantly against, too, I think anyone is, thinks about it. Is not, I don't think, a position paper for the San Diego Unified School District. I think this point needs to be clarified.
Well, I'm sure that I didn't imply that the emphasis should be particularly placed on the school with regard to the publication. I'm saying that you have a publication who are going to continue to start the issue, to start the fight. It is obvious. So, what's going to be done about it?
Whether it's a school or a paper, you're saying the
right.
publication itself is bad for what you say.
With
no.
the
okay.
publication.
All right. All right.
The people in the community are going to deal with the school situation.
All right. Okay.
They're going to deal with that.
In the back.
I am in the community actually going from a national school. And I've been working for 2 years in the community of national schools that face different problems of education. And talking with the parents. And up to this point, is that we have come to the conclusion, many of the parents, even the school teachers, and some of the school board, talking that it's a problem that we have system for teachers to stay there for 10 years or more, sometimes for the you know, that period. And some of these teachers, they are human too, and sometimes they will become tired. Or maybe the kind of stuff that they're supposed to teach, they don't know exactly how they like it. And somehow there are no very potential teachers or good teachers. And so this time, as they happened in Sweetwater High School, there was a pupil, a junior high school, that he was having a trouble with the teacher. And this teacher is a very young person, he seems to be temperamental. Anyway, she was disappointed with this boy because he didn't speak English. And she forced him to speak English and said, well, I don't know how. And so then, in return of that, she started calling him back names in Spanish, which he understood these things. There is one thing they did about, the only thing they did about, they was transfer this institution to Sweetwater High School. Then again, I was told that they had the problem and this boy, he was suspended. And I go over to talk with the mother and interpreter and Mr. Matthew, the principal. And they happened to say the same teacher that this youngster had in junior high. And this teacher kept his temple, some kind of grant on him, and he did the same way. Both of them, they were kindly. So they had some kindly differences. But still, the only thing they can do about was, well, they cannot change the teacher, because the teacher has the right to be teaching there for so long. And then the only thing to do with this boy was to transfer to a different classes. And there was not much to choose. The best thing they can do was that he will take driving lessons or go and take a family class. So he needs the English. He was supposed to take geography and English. And then there are 12 amazing why these kids are not ready to finish. But they finish high school anyway. They are not prepared to go to work, or they are not even ready to read or write. Now, the same thing happened. Then 3 or 4 days later, there was suspended 2 more kids. And I went over and talked to the kids and to the parents. I wanted to know what was the situation. And the same thing happened, that this teacher, same teacher, was disappointed with all boys. She thinks that sometimes she likes some kids. And all in this is not just Mexican American, but this happened that in this particular case that they were just lined up on Mexican boys. And this Mexican boy, he was suspended. And I asked him, well, what was the situation? What did you did? It was supposed to be a fight, but there wasn't no fight. He said, I was in the classroom and I had forgotten my pencil. I said, well, you know the regulations, you're supposed to be in the pencil, you are no more a child. And this is the thing that you're supposed to be there teaching your responsibility. Besides, he just came back from Mexico, down south from Guadalajara, Jalisco. That's a place where the education is very high. And this kid here is very smart. Anyway, the problem he has is language. So, but this is a state. Well, then you turn around and go back in the corner and turn your face in the wall. So he didn't like that. And he said, well, I go back, but I won't turn my face to the wall. So then when they talk it to the principal, and the parents came over to talk to the principal, the teacher didn't say that. The only point he bring up was that this boy will mind her. But I mean, whatever boy in the mind of the principal was, probably, you know, he probably gave it his own homework or something. So they didn't bring up the whole communication. It was really one of the facts. I mean, that if this teacher had the right to put these kids in the wall, looking at the wall, and see a high school student, is that my question? Is that what the right thing to do?
Well, when you put the question direct that way, we'll have to ask for an interpretation that way. I should hope you would raise the issue, however, in terms of number one here, raise it to a level of raising that issue, and Mr. Dunley might can reply both to your question and to the issue involved, and we'll give him a chance to reply. Mr. Ward, Mr. Dunley.
Mr. Backlund had something to say, perhaps it's relevant to.
Well, I just sort of wanted to bring out a more generalized point from what you said. From my experience in teaching, what the communities really want, as far as the schools go and what they deserve, is teachers who are in touch with the community, who know the type of student they have, and who can do a good job teaching in relation to that community. And as she says, of course, under the tenure system that we have, you find teachers who have been in areas for, you know, years and years, or teachers who have tenure and have no relationship to the community, who come in from, you know, miles away. And these teachers, in my estimation, if they don't serve the community, you know, they shouldn't be teaching there. And so it seems to me that it's crucial that the community, you know, express to the school system, and especially in each particular school to the principal, who has such an influence on the hiring and the, you know, placement of teachers, that the principals and the district, you know, be aware of this, and if people are not serving the community, they'd be moved out of that school. Now, she's brought up, you know, these particular situations, and they crop up all the time. And frankly, they're just teachers who don't belong where they're teaching. You know, they think they're teaching one community, whereas really they're teaching an entirely different community. And we have to have administrators who realize this and can move these people out.
Ms. Dunley? Well, what Mrs. Backman says, of course, is correct. And ideally, you have in every teaching station a teacher who was without fault, without poor judgment in handling youngsters, with deep understanding, empathy, all of the things I'm sure that this group has talked about in the past. But from a practical and realistic standpoint, this is a situation that does not obtain. I'm afraid as long as the teachers are as human as the rest of us, and I think as parents we've made mistakes with youngsters, exercise poor judgment, and this can happen in a given situation. I believe you've had teaching experience, Mr. Wayman, where in a particular situation a teacher may not show good judgment, and I think this is what Mrs. Beecham has reference to. I was going to say that this is something that happened at the high school level. To ask someone to go to the corner and put his face in the corner, this is hardly the thing that an adolescent is going to buy or accept, or to allow him to have his ego intact in that class.
Seems to me what we're hearing, though, is not a request that people be perfect or not make mistakes in judgment, but it seems to me what we're hearing is that since people are people, there has to be some kind of channel through which you get direct correction and have the administrations respond to those parents in a human way and speaking directly to what they are talking about, as opposed to continuing to do it arbitrarily. It seems to me this is what they're saying.
I would agree with that.
Right. Louder, please, can't hear.
Add on to what was said before Mr. Donnelly replied, the idea of the teacher who is insensitive to the community. I've seen a lot of hiring from teachers in the community, so first-year teachers often are placed within ghetto schools or have no choice. They have no tenure. They have no power, so to speak, for choice, and I know one argument is that they're more flexible, but then another argument against this might be the reality shock of just coming out of school, and you're placing them in a hardcore area that they are not able to deal with. And then, this to me gives room for many of the problems to be creative, which we are talking about right now. And second point I wanted to make to Mr. Donnelly was, you said, teachers are human. I think this is what the community is asking for, human teachers rather than inhuman. The fact is that teachers should be willing to admit to their mistakes. And if you walk in many classrooms, they are not willing to do this because I think they are thinking in terms of relinquishing some power. And relating to students as human beings and allowing yourself to be human too, where there is an inter-respect factor working, I think our humanistic factor working will give you better results than saying, you know, well, teachers do make mistakes. Yeah, but get teachers that will admit to this and give them room to move from there.
Well, I think the point is well taken. I think that what you've mentioned here is as a reason why a lot of people don't like to admit mistakes. What is this reason? Why do we fail, at least in our culture, to admit mistakes?
Well, then, what I would think in terms of your hiring practices and administrative level, this is the only place I see change is really being made, is that you examine what is going into the classroom more than what has been. You see, the thing is, there are people that are capable of doing it, and you are lacking manpower. However, if you require more of teachers, it will become a profession. They will become more dedicated. They will become more involved, and thus you'll get better results.
I'm going to interrupt here after the next comment, Mr. Marco here,
yes,
and ask us to look at the agenda items and see if we can speak to any of them in succession. We're still on 1 and 2, and perhaps we're also touching upon 5 after Mr. Marple gets through.
Yes, speaking of school situation, my children were taken down here to Cholis and Mead School, and Mrs. Betty Stubbs told my children and gave my children X-lax and stuff to my children, make him go in his pants to bring him home from school. And when we complained to the school principal they refused to listen to us, they refused to do anything. This is Miss Betty Stubbs came in and helped Mr. James A. Peck to humiliate and degrade us before the courts and the judge here by use of their lies and defamation of character to us. And we weren't given a chance to speak on that. And we live in the ghetto. We come from the minority group, and I think it's about time we should have this brought up.
Right. Let's look at number 2, agenda item.
We go into that, can I make a comment?
All right.
I heard something. It seems to me that I heard something expressed here by Mr. Donnelly and the lady over here in connection with saying that the community must express their demands to the administrator. It seems to me that the parents, at least for the Mexican parents in that particular district and in every other district, they have been trying to tell the people this for 10, 15 years, but they haven't been listening. It's back in the pocket. But what good does it do for us to tell them over and over and over and over, and they are not doing anything about it? We've been telling them this. It is their responsibility, not just say, well, the parents won't let us know, we've been telling them
Let me respond to that. I think we are meeting with people in the community and responding to what they feel are their needs and their problems and their concerns. We have an ad hoc committee that is meeting, has met 3 times this year. We'll have a meeting next week. We're currently meeting at Capitol Park. We have parent advisory committee. This was a suggestion of the Imperial Beach Media Action Council at each of our target schools. It's a good idea. We are hearing from those people, from those individual schools.
Did you allow them to select it, or did you select the parent advisory group? Because it's pretty padded.
No, we let them select.
Oh.
And you know, one of the areas, for example, I'm going on the offensive here if you want to hear this itself. The larger community has talked about counseling, the lack of it for youngsters, Mexican American descent, who perhaps because of the language barrier and because perhaps someone did not understand them, did not get as good counseling from the Anglos as might be desired. So our district is moving ahead to find people within our district, Mexican Americans, who have the fluency, the bilingualism, the understanding, we're being careful of this, and giving them periods of assignment as advisors to work with these youngsters. And at least the people and the kids themselves, in the contact with one that we have so far, are very much pleased with this. And this will continue as we move along with other people. And we're also encouraging them at the same time to pursue the academic work to get a counseling credential so that one day they could move into a full-time counseling position. Now, you have an incredulous look on your face that says you don't believe that actually happening.
I would like the lady over there wants to tell you, because she's from the community. I'm delighted that you started. Yeah. And you've had 3 meetings. I think this is the beginning. That deserves some credit. I would like to know how many people are involved in this counseling, but rather than me do it, I already have the people, because the people from the community speak directly to me.
I like that. And I just wish to say this thing. I've been working for 3 years in the community action council at the community meeting.
The louder, please.
And we have this thing that we would like very much to try to communicate with our situation. Communication between the school, the parents, the teachers, and I just say that our whole problem is communication. There is not enough communication. Fine. The last time I have this kind of problem or situation, which in a way, the more I think about, I like to analyze, and I like you for answering it. Because I think so you might have the right reason to say to this or this.
I was talking to the principal of junior high school, and you know, the school has hired aides to work with the community. And I asked the principal that what they were the duties of the aides. And they were very similar duties that we have as a community aides for the CAC. So then we will have to have communication. That time, a particular day, I was talking to the principal of junior high school about some problems that we see that we have in education. And he agreed in everything. He said, but we have to take time. These things cannot be just overnight. And the school books, they don't arrive. And many teachers, they are not willing to help in this way and that way. So I was talking about tutoring. There's many kids that are right now at junior high, they are not able to read and write. Even so, there are no kids who come. I mean, they are living in here. I mean, they were born in here in the United States, and still this is a problem. And I was bringing out all these questions. And I asked him about his age. And I told him, you know, my situation, what is my job? He didn't have the courtesy to say, I want to be involved. I want to be involved in the PTA. And he would say, when did I meet or any meeting? It just happened that one of the times of the community, she was called to come to that particular meeting. I was with my husband, and we were there, and I was renting to the high school. My children are along there. My niece was in there, in that school, on the Mexican-American class, or the English as a second language. So I went there to that meeting. And we met in there, and there was Laura, like you say, there were some parents in there, giving their opinions, what did they feel, what they would like to change, what they was nice, what they was not nice. So there was this situation where some of the parents didn't agree with the method of study. There were four mothers who were close to me, and we were talking about and this situation. We would like very much for our kids to move out of the English class as a second language, because right now they have enough basis to understand English, but in some houses, like if they are not forced right now to the regular classes with the other kids, you are putting them back. And they don't want it because they were very smart children. My niece, she was in the same situation. She was a very smart girl. She came from Mexico City. She had all eight. And that means, you know, she had a scholarship and she wants to finish school here in the United States. So when she was in this class, she said, I don't think so I will ever be equal if I go back to Mexico, because the only thing they are teaching me right now is language. But you say the other subjects is nothing to. I mean, they don't teach us English, so they don't teach us the geography or the other subjects that I would be on the same level. Fine. And the third point that I find out, it was funny to say, and this thing I wonder, because my husband pointed out, you know, he said, how did you think it this way? You took some pictures. It's not the idea that I like to be in a picture of her notified in the newspapers or anything important. But I wanted to know why was your reason when you took the picture just to talk to my husband. He's an American and he looks quite a lot.
I took off your husband?
Yeah. We were in the brown.
No, believe me, that wasn't intentional. I was just trying to get a picture of the roof there and for people to look at.
And this is my point of view. And then you took the other side and you took out my picture, because my husband was set across to me, and I was set across to him.
We're going to give him a chance in a minute to respond if you'll kind of capture it.
And that way, I want to know, if you cut me because I look like American, or you cut me because I was represented as a CIC. I went there as the community aide for the CIC. That was my sister, CIC, Community Action Fund. And also, I was at a parent insurrection for education, and he's one of my points of view, and being that, because this is what we want, communication, and to say, you know, what we feel.
Well, let me cut you short, please, and get some more reactions, if I may. Did you want to respond to that at all, Mr. Conley, now?
Say, my golly,
he asked a lot of points.
I took pictures, and I'm just an amateur photographer with a Polaroid camera, and I snap pictures. I didn't realize it.
I wasn't hearing that one because I was in the picture. I was analyzing books. Maybe something is
probably
your nature. I just went around snapping groups of pictures, and I guess I'm cut your husband out of one, but.
And you cut me off too. There are only 10 people in there with should be made clear that the ESL classes are not enough, and that the ESL classes zoom in a lot of money. They're very costly practice, and they're not doing the job for us. So this is what we want to say. This is what she was trying to say.
Yeah, I think that, she said a lot of things about issues that we should pull out.
I think I should elaborate upon that. We are moving into bilingual education. I think that's what you have reference to, Mrs. Beecham. And there has been bilingual education at the school that you have reference to. The teacher there, as you know, is bilingual and has done more than just ESL in that class. As a matter of fact, she is so competent that she is considered a resource person and a consultant. I think you know her, Mrs. Beck. An excellent teacher. And one who is gung-ho. But we have, in our district, a number of classes that are supported by federal money. Mrs. Backman was formerly a teacher of one of those ESL classes, and she also taught social studies, isn't that right? In the Spanish language, the youngsters who cannot take instruction in English. And I think a number of people in this room will know about Title VII of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is the Bilingual Education Act. And the Sweetwater District and a number of elementary districts in that area have submitted a proposal for bilingual education, and it appears that it will be funded at the rate of about $300,000. So just in a word, bilingual education is expanding. We have had it already in several of our schools, but it will be expanded. Some of you may have caught the Channel 10.
Yes. I have here the status of the amendment 1969, the SDA. I don't think I should read all the technical points, but two or three points are important. And I don't know whether I should even go into the details. Some of us have been discussing it. You know, it has to come out of the Senate committee and all that before anything is done about it.
Is that the one where the buses was?
This is 874, not the other one. The one you're talking about. I think what we could summarize, though, about three bills, as you know, relating to it. And what is being done is extending of the program another 3 or 4 years, 2 years, I think it is, two years, and two or three additional provisions. But I get a sense of something else. I get a sense that we as citizens outside of the establishment don't really understand our role yet. And I'd like to move it to another level and look at item number two and these other items in terms of what we, the citizens, should do. Then I hear all the time articulations of our frustrations and our problems. And I'm wondering if we can't talk to what Ambrose pointed out, if we move it to a broader level, broader perspective. We are going to have a hell of a lot of problems in this county and many schools in the next months, years, or what have you. And somewhere we ought to begin looking at these issues in terms of what the citizens' role should be, not in terms of what we've been saying it's their responsibility. We know that. But the reason the problem exists is because they haven't carried that out. What are the citizens, what can the citizens do in understanding that in a democratic process, there are means by which you can get these demands, period. I'm trying to say that the other side that we talk about here. We bring the problems here day after day, and we come back and bring them the second day. The citizens have a hell of a lot of power. If they can begin to harness that power out in the community, as opposed to the other side of it, and begin to do something about harnessing that power, and get those things that we keep talking about. Now, I'm not just referring, obviously, to the Sweetwater District. I'm talking about if we're going to have problems, as Ambrose pointed out, in our local schools. And until the citizens see the issues a little clearer, it seems to me, that it is within their power to demand and get from those schools, through the democratic process, a response. Until we do that, until we start talking about that side of it, too, we're really not covering all these issues here on this agenda sheet. Ambrose?
Taking a look at one and two in a general way.
Number one and two?
Yes.
Okay.
We know that students in recent weeks have made numerous demands of the school administration and the Board of Education. And we know also that in the community, parents and community leader groups have been meeting. This is especially true in the community which is predominantly black, Southeast San Diego, especially since the Lincoln crisis, the height of the crisis there. There have been numerous community meetings taking a very good introspective look at the situation, realizing that the demands that have been made by the students will not in any major way begin to solve the problems within the school. So the community has gone beyond that, and they are taking a very good look at the feasibility and the probability of bringing control of the school in the community to that community. And I think that this is the area that we will, as citizens and community people, will have to devote much time to. For instance, as an intermediate measure, the community with which I'm working now made a presentation to the Board of Education yesterday, which the proposal, if adopted, would allow a teacher review board to be set up. And this review board would be made up of parents, students, and community leaders. And this review board would have the responsibility of screening teachers coming into the area school. This was presented to the Board of Education yesterday, and I think we ask that the superintendent give a reply by the 22nd, and he did take this under advisement, and we do anticipate a reply. This is another intermediate step. It is not the overall thing. The community out there, as I indicated, they are taking a very, very good look at the possibility and the feasibility of bringing local control of the school here. You can see the significance of having this local control, because in a situation of this sort, the parent could better pinpoint the teacher in the school who is responsible for teaching that child, and the parent can have would be in a better position to have the teacher account to him for the child's activity in the school. And there are many other situations which can come from this, the curriculum and et cetera. And I think this is the area in which the communities must go now.
All right, I guess I'm alluding to the same fact when I say it seems to me we're not completing a full discussion of this until we look at what's going on in all of its aspects. Putting the demands is one side of the coin. What the problem is this discrepancy between what citizens can do about their demands and the continuous frustrations encountered by not getting the responses that they want from the administration. And I think we ought to take a hard look at both of those and talk to both of those when we talk to these issues. So let's see if we can address them in a total range in terms of 2, 3, 4, and 5. On the agenda, right?
Yes, I think that you are saying that you were mentioning two areas here, the community and the administration. I think that we are confronted with a third major thing here, and this is the attitude of the faculty. And the faculty, by and large, in the city are racist. And this is something that we are going to have to deal with. The administrators cannot do it alone. Somewhere along the line, we're going to have to deal with that faculty, because it is the faculty at this point that are not responding at all. Not only that, they're polarizing everything. They are the ones that are having us starting breaking communication. They are creating. They are the most potential danger in all the problems ahead of us. The administrators are blamed because of the things that they have done in hiring, in not sensitizing people, in putting people out of the area, people without experience, people that are not professionals, putting them in this school. Yes, I'm perpetuating this. I'm perpetuating their lack of response to the community demands. But what are you dealing here? This is the explosive situation. It is the faculty.
You do not, you separate the faculty from the administration, you
mean? Very definitely.
Yes, I'm going to say right here that as a parent, as a citizen, you can tell me I got rights and I can do something about it, but I'm going to tell you you're wrong. Because when I go to the school and I complain about even simple rights, then they make good and damn sure they punish me as a non-conformist. They make sure my kid don't get good grades. I can't afford to send my kid to school without a scholarship. They hit me where it hurts the most, the pocketbook. And I defy you or anybody else sitting here to do something about this kind of thing. You talk to a teacher. There's not a damn thing you can do, Mrs. Pilgrim. I'm a tenured teacher. And by golly, when I ask other people to get behind me and support me, they say, sure, Mrs. Felgo, I will. But will you let my kid get out of school this year? So, because he has to have a scholarship. I can't let my child suffer. Next year, I'll help you. How do you fight this kind of thing? Because I don't care how you fight it, there's always some other way to get back at you where it hurts you the most. And they get through you within the pocketbook and through your kid.
Carol, we got Bob right here. Over here. Bob.
Right, my name is Bob Moss. I'm an advisor at San Diego High School in the Inner City Project. And my job is to relate more meaningful experiences to black students. And I think I can say something in a few minutes here that will touch on all these things. As far as media was concerned, I think it was the situation at San Diego High School was very, the publicity given it, even though the students at the school called a press conference. And it was attended by all areas of the news media. This was the things the students said were things that the paper really didn't feel was important. But as far as the community was concerned, as far as the city was concerned, the things that the students released in this press conference would have been very informative. We're talking about teachers and faculty attitudes, administration. I've got a lot of material here of certain things that have come from these demands that, as far as the city school system is concerned, the superintendent has gone on record of saying certain things. On the third paragraph, the first page of his replies to the Lincoln High School demand, in essence he said, we will search for black and brown teachers who are more than just black and brown in color, but black and brown in mind. Now, because the man made this one statement, I think, which I don't know how well this was passed on to the community, but we talk about getting teachers into the system who are sensitive to the needs of students. Because of the statement that the man has made in paragraph 3, the community has to force him to live up to this commitment. I have the replies of the superintendent to the students of San Diego High School. I think it's very important that you realize that, if I can find it here, that the superintendent said this. One of the demand of the black students at San Diego High School was more black teachers and full-time counselors, more young black teachers and full-time counselors who recognize and understand the needs of black students. And the superintendent said, "We plan to work with the faculty and the administration to utilize persons from the black and brown community to supplement staffing formulas in an effort to provide the maximum concentration of black and brown teachers and counselors. In this process, consideration will be given teacher and counselor attitude, In this process, consideration will be given to teacher and counselor attitude and to securing people who think black and brown." Several times, I was involved in several meetings with the superintendent, one at Lincoln and one with the students at San Diego High School. One thing he pointed out, many times the students and people of the community questioned and said, "Well, how are we sure these things will be followed?" And he says, "Jack Hornbeck always keeps his word." So I think what has to happen now is there has to be information of the situation, the demands and so forth, circulated throughout the community so that people know the information that has passed through. Furthermore, to emphasize, you know, parents, people here realize there are problems as far as faculty is concerned, but we can never pinpoint them. I'd like to take maybe a few minutes here to give a little background on myself as far as how I got into this inner city project. For 3 years, I've worked out at Mission Bay High School. I felt I was fairly successful, and I guess the district thought I was too, because when they opened up this inner city project, which was $750,000 to find out ways to by which education could be more meaningful to black and brown students, I was asked to come over as an advisor at San Diego High School in this project. Everyone was telling me what a fabulous job I was doing, blah, blah, blah. So I came over to San Diego High School. I feel that I am doing the same job. I feel that I uphold to all the ethics and the things that good teachers uphold to. Also, I find it more and more difficult every day to keep to this, this type of philosophy. But here's a letter that I received in the mail, anonymous, of course. One who writes this stuff didn't have guts enough to put the name on it, but "I have long had a special interest in San Diego High School. I believe the stone at the front of the door has 1904 on it. During the past 65 years, the thousands of students who have passed through the doors have been of different colors, nationalities, and religion. Yet for 65 years, they all got along well and worked towards the betterment of San Diego High. From my observation, the damage has been done since September of 1968 was most unnecessary, and San Diego High School will never completely recover. As I understand the situation, you had much to do with the upheaval. Thanks a whole bunch. Signed, just one of the many thousands of loyal San Diego High School graduates." I think within this is the basic, the gentleman on my left here, society in general has had this big dream of integration. You know, we want to integrate everything. You look at anything that comes out of the schools, especially San Diego High School. San Diego High School is pointed to with pride by the district because it has a large representation of all the ethnic groups. And when a picture is taken, the integration is beautiful. But then when you look into the classrooms and you find out that most of the black and brown students are in remedial classes, most of the white students are in honors classes, integration hasn't worked. And the attitudes of the faculty there on some of the activities that we've had for black and brown students this past year is, "Take us back to the good old days. This black and brown, I'm tired of all this black and brown mess." Statements such as, "This inner city project has broken down all the things we have built up through the years."
Good.
Now, I'd like to refer to one other thing. A letter that was, there were several letters during the crisis we had a few weeks ago. A few letters circulated to the various teachers. And again, they were anonymous. Anonymous, no, no, no signature. One goes through all the problems, and then because the minority community is now asking for the school to look at its education and give more meaningful experiences to these students, faculty members now say this: appeasement appears to be the answer. Just one slice of bologna. Let the camel put his nose under the tent. Now, how many of you here realize that parable or that bit of travel tale? I'll read it to you.
It's clean.
Very good. There happened to be a gentleman going across the desert on his camel. We'll call him Ahab the Arab. Ahab was on his camel traveling across the desert, and night fell. So he pitched his tent and tied the camel outside. Well, as the hours of darkness increased, it became very cold and chilly. So the camel put his nose under the tent, and he asked Ahab if he could keep his nose under the tent to keep it warm. So Ahab said, "Okay, camel, keep your nose warm." A few more minutes, the camel disturbed Ahab in his sleep again and asked if he could put his neck in. And so Ahab said, "Of course, camel, put your neck in. Don't bother me anymore, I'm trying to sleep." So after more interruptions, the camel had his entire body into the tent, underneath the tent, and Ahab looked in a disgusting manner to the camel, and the camel then, with his tail, knocked Ahab out of the cold. So the camel had taken over. Now, to a large number of faculty members, will the camel put his nose under the tent? You know, so we give minority students, we give the community a chance to voice its opinion. We listen to these silly, stupid demands of the students, things they think are meaningful to them. Are we going to listen to them? Are we going to listen to these students? If we listen to them, if we try to make a change, pretty soon they're going to knock us out of the tent. And this is the attitude of these teachers. I think how to use citizens to fight the system. I think, first of all, the fires of the citizens have to be lit. I think that there's so many people in the community walking around, they trust the system. The system has done a great job. The children come home and they say, "Well, such and such has happened." And the parents say, "No, that couldn't happen. Go back and be a good boy." And things happen over and over again. People in the community have to come up to the schools, have to walk through the classroom. A very critical time going on now. Some teachers, to see a group of parents in their classroom, would show the friendly fakers would show how they really feel. And the community has to come up to the school time and time again, and talk with the students. The students will let you know. Come up to San Diego High School. Talk to the black students. Talk to the brown students. Talk to the white students. They have plenty of experiences that they'll be able to relate.
They covered a lot of things. The judge had his hand up, and then Tara again, and third one, then back over there. And that's
anybody that has been with this thing for some time, thinking about it, concerned about it, or involved in it, is aware that we're not talking about anything new today. As a matter of fact, everything that has been said this morning was said in the report that was made to the Board of Education 3 years ago by the Citizens Committee. We pointed out that the big problem was the attitude, one of teachers and of administrators, and that until that something was done about that, these other problems of quality education would be meaningless. You can have all sorts of form and it'll have no substance without teachers who, without administrators who are insisting that this is the way it's going to be, teachers, and without teachers who will follow through. The other day at an Urban Coalition Task Force meeting,
somebody suggested we ought not, that it really wasn't the teacher's fault, so we ought not ride the teachers that they're trying, but it's the administrators. Well, sure, it's the administrators. But as I said then, if the teachers, as strong and enlarged a body as they are, said there's going to be quality education for everybody, there would be quality education for everybody. And you cannot, and the teachers are hiding under a rock and a rug when they say that it's somebody else's fault. The teachers are at the heart of it. And then the administrators are intimidated by the teachers, and the teachers intimidated by the administrators. And until we hit the attitudes of all of them, we're not going to get anywhere with anything. Now, what happened at Lincoln, also, I think something ought to be discussed in terms of the legal aspects of what happened at Lincoln. Somewhere or another, the schools and the teachers, which are governmental functions, do not think of themselves in terms of a governmental function. They have set themselves off here in another segment of society, sacrosanct and unchallengeable. But the Constitution provides for the right to petition for a redress of grievances. The Supreme Court of the United States just recently made it clear that the constitutional provisions apply to young people as well as to adults. It doesn't say that these constitutional protections only apply to the adult world. Who's to say that the adult world is more mature than the young people? As a matter of fact, is that they're in terms of the status of knowledge and information that they have, and even maturity, many of those who are still in school are much more mature, certainly more informed than are their parents. So that what happens? Students and parents petition the school for a redress of grievances. They want to be heard. And the school system tells them, get the hell off the grounds and before we'll even talk to you. Well, where do you confront government except on the doorstep of government? That's the right you have. If you can't confront them where they are, and if you can't confront those that have the power to make decisions, it's a useless provision. And I think the people who have grievances to make should realize that the Constitution of the United States is behind them, and that the United States Supreme Court has recently said as much, and that if the school system throws any more people off the campus when they're doing is asking to be heard, that they are the ones who are in violation of the law. They are violating basic law. They are violating the Constitution of the United States. And that, my God, you ought not stop there. Nobody should stop there. The moment that is done, there ought to be legal proceedings taken and pursued right up to the top.
All right. I think you opened up some of the other questions. It's been knocked about. Tara?
In terms of...
Lara,
I guess I should identify myself. I am an outsider in Fort Kennedy. I'm a counselor in training at San Diego State. However, I petitioned to be put in the ghetto schools for experiences and have been hired by the inner city office to work with students there. And luckily, I have had an education myself, going through the school crisis and meeting the administration of the system, quote. In talking with Dr. Hornbeck, in terms of power, you know, looking at what he has on the board, and in terms of where you're saying meet the people where they have to be met, when the students were discussing their demands and when the answer was given, we asked Dr. Hornbeck, all right, you are going to do these things, but what about the faculty? Is there a possibility? In fact, we demand an evaluation system to be set up of the implementation that you have made. Now, in terms of citizens groups, I see now a possible role for us to get together. The various organizations' readings are very powerful to me. To push this evaluation, if it is not accepted, to take legal measures, because the students themselves, as you say, by law, deserve an education, not a training period. And the evaluation should include parents as well as students. I asked Dr. Hornback whether any teacher that was afraid to be evaluated by a student should be in the classroom. And he couldn't answer that. And he said that actually that was quite irrelevant. But being at San Diego High School and seeing the polarization and the, this is a school tradition, and I've seen catfights in the hall between teachers, they're no longer the gentleman's code existing. Now people are saying, I don't like what you're doing. I don't like you. You are supporting change. You are making waves. And I have found that I am making waves. And I have found that the kids are being prostituted for things that they deserve. And at this point, I'm fed up. And I feel like, I would never go to a school system as it exists and try and sell a counseling program. Because I don't think I need to sell anything. I think that what has happened is that we've gotten rid of values, we've gotten rid of morals, and we're dealing with technology, we're dealing with our children just like they're machines. We're putting them together and sending them out. Although we aren't putting them together well. And consequently, they come up with demands. And what I think we should examine is why we have to be a demand in the first place. Why did we have to come to be superintendent? If education was such as it should have been, all the kids are asking for sensitivity, then we wouldn't have had this. So why can't we organize in terms of power to see that these things are carried through and serve as an evaluative basis, and if not, take it to legal territory?
Well, I have to be leaving because I have a very important meeting at Mesa College, but I think I ought to mention this to you. In connection with the demands of the Chicano students at San Diego High School and at Lincoln High School, they were very specific in the things that they were asking for. It tells a story. It tells a story of what is being done in the school. You need nothing else but to say they don't want the mixing of the classes, that they do not want that they need to be part of a committee to screen the teachers that are teaching them, that they do not want special classes, that in those special classes they want the right to go and evaluate their own people and see if they belong there. And it's just results. But rather than get lost in that, I want to tell you, and I am getting excited about this, is because at Mesa College, we have for the first time presented a plan for the establishment of a department of Chicano studies. This is an important step. I'm sure that you know that the Chicano movement in the Southwest is a very important movement now. Our stress is on education, change through education. It is a concerted movement. It is in the Southwest of the United States. It's speaking for the 5 million Mexican Americans in the Southwest of the United States, 80% of whom are born in the United States. Whether or not they speak English, that's a different issue. 80% of them are citizens of the United States, states that hold state taxes, etc., etc. Our needs are not being met. The educational system has totally failed us. We have to speak in terms of a Chicano, and I have to make this, because what the blacks are trying to, I can't speak for them, but what I'm saying that in the Southwest of the United States, we have been penalized, and we're still being penalized in a way that you have no idea, because we get it on two different accounts. Number one, because we have an accent, we are bilingual, because we, not only because we have a different color skin, but because when we speak Spanish, we put other people out. So we get on two accounts. Now, I have confronted, in a sense, we are confronting the whole educational system of higher education in California through a master plan of education which we have developed, which will bring about this change. It's the last chance to bring about this change for us in a peaceful way. By this we mean, if we make those community colleges realize that they are serving the people in a community, and that a community is a total community. The concept of a total community is what we must implement
all the way the line. We have to try it at the junior colleges first, because if what we are proposing, and I know this is true also of the black student movement and the black professionals, but if we can make this breakthrough and with our proposal implement this concept that we can only move along if we work with the concept of a global community, and out of that 17% of the community in California is Chicano community, Mexican American community, and this is our power, and we are going to demand this. I need your support in your awareness, because we have been told that there is no need for this, that there is no need for you to know about what our needs are, that there is no need in this community to put through this type of department and curriculum. They want to give us courses, one course here, one course there, one course there. That means no autonomy. That means we cannot experiment. That means we cannot make the higher education work for the people directly with the community. That's what it means. We need this. And we need this very vitally now.
I'm sure.
I have to go, because I'm facing the curriculum committee today. We
presented
a full proposal.
I hope you're talking in terms of number two. If you stay over here when you meet your curriculum committee, it will be another 400, 500, or 1,000 years before you get
No. I'm talking about the faculty senate, which ends up back to the curriculum committee, because the administrators told us, don't come to us with your proposals. There's nothing we can do. It's the faculty senate. We go to the faculty senate. We follow the curriculum. The curriculum committee approves it. We go to the faculty senate. The faculty senate says, oh, there's a loophole here, there's a loophole here, there's a loophole here. Go back to curriculum committee. We go back to curriculum committee, we go back to senate.
And
we go to administrators at the top administration, and they say, we've got to move through channels.
Let me suggest
something,
Grazer.
At the beginning.
Let me suggest something. All you're telling us is, we know all that right there. We can write every verse and chapter that you've said. I'm suggesting when you go to your committee, talk in terms of your group that's presenting them. Talk in terms of how, what you're going to do about it. That's what I'm suggesting.
Carol, student hasn't been heard, but a student did write this, and I would like to read it. I'll leave the uncomplimentary terms out as far as that.
You don't have to.
I don't?
Well, you make your judgment, I mean.
All right. But who can? Will understand my frustration, my pain. Who can I turn to? Who will help me untwist my stomach? My body is screwed with this pain. Mi grito, my scream is loud and long. Can't you hear it, that I feel ugly? To discover after all these years that I don't love myself, I don't care about myself, that all these years I've been looking at myself through gabacho, that means American eyes, judging, condemning. Damn, I was a racist against myself. I hated myself because I'm me. No more white man. No more gabacho, gabacha. I'm brown. I'm beautiful. I'm a Chicana. And you know what, white man, uncomplimentary term, educator? You can't, and this is also, you can't fool around with me anymore.
Fool around was also your interpretation?
Yes.
All right.
And I think unless the community gets behind this, I'm afraid what you can't fool around with me anymore means.
Okay. We're going to have to cut it off in a minute. We've got two or three hands up. Let's go around and get these hands. Mrs. Philco.
I wonder if I could just make one brief statement to the gentleman over there in the blue suit, and I hope you'll forgive me. I'm just a working class person. I think it was fine for you to talk about our rights and the law stand up for us and all this crap. But who in the hell can afford it? I'm over the $3,000 poverty guideline. I can't go to legal aid. And believe me, I don't have a color TV. I got a secondhand car. I'm going to buy a secondhand washing machine tomorrow. And I can't afford lawyers. It's fine for all of you to sit around and say, I've got rights and the law stick up for me and all this crap.
But like I say, I work hard. I can't afford it. I believe next week I think I'll sign up for the welfare. Maybe I can afford it. I'm right.
Go for that.
Judge, you want to act there, right?
You know, I'm sorry that I didn't. What I wanted to add was something she said before about what happens when you go to the school to fight, or what happens when your child gets identified with you if you happen to be an outspoken person in the area. She's absolutely right. It's happened to my child. It's happened to my child in high school. Not with every teacher, but you can see the pattern. You know, with the teachers that feel negative toward the position that I've taken, here's a report card with A, put D, and then on this teacher, have to be one of these tight conforming English teachers, who thinks more of confidence and who will not let his student be creative and express his I don't want your ideas, I don't want your opinions, you just write it like it says, you know. And in one paper that he wrote, he quoted something from the Saturday Review of Literature, and the teacher happened to miss the fact that it was a quote, and one of the uncomplimentary comments was, bad sentence structure, you know. Well, in any event, if you take a position and you have a child in school, your child may very well suffer for it. But so what? I mean, suffer immediately in grace. So what? Things are going to change. What the child is getting now is, in large part, irrelevant. He isn't suffering, really, in educational terms, and I think my son now accepts that fact, that what he is learning by this is that there are people like this in society, and that when he is an adult in a position to do something about it, he may be able to act. Now, in terms of legal action, I'm not talking about the poor sucker that can't afford the attorney to fight for his individual rights. You can't do this on an individual basis. People have to work in concert. People have to work in concert. And that's how citizens fight the system. They can make their individual complaints, but when
they're scared, because they're going to have to put up with the same thing as me. And so my kid is a guinea pig. I was a guinea pig, and my mother and father was a guinea pig in this education system. We all spoke up for ourselves, and we all suffered. How much longer is it going on? My grandchildren will still be used for guinea pigs the way you're talking.
There are other people that will speak for it. And if you don't worry so much about your own individual problem and the fact that other people have this problem too, and that you've got to work in concert with them, and this is a community problem and not your problem, something can be done about it. But when we run around thinking about my problem with my kid, we're never going to get anywhere. This is your bag today, lady.
I'm
going
to put mine in a private school.
You don't need to do that.
So I'll take another job.
You're running away. You're running away. Leave your kid in a public school and fight the public school. The system is going to be changed. And the educational institutions up here are going to start thumbing their nose at the academic credits that come from high school because they are meaningless. They don't mean a damn thing. And you're going to get your kids in these institutions because the higher institutions are going to say, to hell with this high school business. It doesn't mean a damn thing. And they're going to start looking at the students.
He's on that.
What you say is very good, you know. The higher educational institutions are going to adjust, but when? I think you mentioned, you know, I'm glad I didn't know the involvement or the awareness of this group. Gentleman mentioned that, you know, the things that I had brought out you had realized before. Well, that's beautiful, because as far as I'm concerned, if we would pull the house right now, everyone is concerned. Everyone realizes the faults of the system.
Okay, so we say, how to use citizens to fight the system. You know, in the community, there's a concentrated group of individuals who have repeatedly gone to the school, gone here and gone there, and said, we want this and we want that, and they've been called militants. As I gaze around here with all the smartly dressed individuals here who, you're concerned, yeah, but see, I'm at the school. I want you, you know, what can you do? This whole room here, instead of me, well, tomorrow, the next day, pick 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 schools, and you as a group, go into those schools. Ask the principal, what are the teacher attitudes? Ask for a faculty meeting. The people of San Diego High School tell me, the faculty say, well, the community never speaks up. Well, for crying out loud, you can come. We represent the community of San Diego High School. What are your problems? What are you as a faculty, what don't you like? Now, there have been some individuals on the camp, within the faculty meeting, there's certain people who say, I don't like this, I don't like that. Get rid of Bob Moss. Get rid of the inner city program. Blah, 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 blah. You know? Okay, it's, I can tell you what I do. Have these people, you, have them, you know, with your tie and with your a judge, to find out loud, you know? You're the one that, you come there and these threatened people will shut up and show where they are and we can get rid of them. They'll get rid of themselves.
You on top of the inner city project. Not that white man that's up there. I'm for that.
But then, who has to tell him this? You know, I tell this guy, I tell these people that they, you know, you either have to understand or get somebody in that will do it. But, you know, I have no power. The power is in the citizens. This room right here, this room, what a revolution you would have in a principal's office. You see?
Not if you went to conference, he wouldn't even let you in. Because
I don't believe, I offer a challenge to this group. I don't believe this group could get up and go to a school and find out what the problems are.
You know why? Because the damn school wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
The administrators wouldn't listen. They would do what they did to the report to Crawford.
You haven't done it yet.
They go to the Board of Education and they complain to the Board of Education. The Board of Education talks to the administrators and they decide there's no problem there. What the hell? If people feel badly enough or strongly enough about it to go to the Board of Education, there is a problem. You investigate it. You investigate to find out why these administrators can say there's no problem when the people who are involved say there's a problem.
So then what do we do? After we get our grievances, we go to the board. How do we take the board to you?
Well, we're taking it to federal court, I would say. From there, we're speaking, you're being a double standard.
What do you do?
The school breaches one thing and then they use another system.
Yeah, all right, let's take law to the legal steps. What do you do?
Yeah, that's
all
right.
When there's enough bribing, you go to the Legal Aid Society. There's a decision by the
government.
Like
you said.
But you don't understand what I'm saying. As a group, like the judge said, as a group, you go to the Legal Aid Society and you petition for legal assistance. There's a provision. The government sat down, was last year, that said that the Legal Aid Society was supposed to handle these problems. It's a domestic, a civil problem, rather. The Legal Aid Society is geared to handle civil and domestic problems. And if that's not a civil problem, I don't know what a civil problem is. We were engaged in a meeting at the EOC about 3 weeks ago where we stated publicly that the Legal Aid Society would take on these cases of people that would be prosecuted, especially parents, because those other problems were held by the juvenile authorities, and we had nothing to do with that. But we also consider the fact that some of these people could have been brought up on conspiracy charges. The Legal Aid Society, along with the Urban Coalition Task Force of Law and Justice, were prepared to take on these cases. And at the present time, there has been no parent or anyone that came to legal aid and requested the help in that particular situation. But we still have the door open, and
well,
we made mention that we're talking to district
this?
Attorney.
Mr. Chairman?
How many people know about this? This is a community
this
action.
This was done at the EOC. All the community action councils were represented. It's up to the community action council to go back to their areas and say, look, we got this okay from the legal aid. If you have any problems, come and see them.
Okay.
This is the reason why we did that. That was all.
All right, so communications then begins the problem. They have to communicate that we have the power to do this.
Well, that's for school administrators to talk in. They're talking in double standards.
I think the question is, again, on this side, you can forget this for the time.
Yeah.
It's still over here. The question is a simple one. What do you do when you got to complain and when you're mad about something? Do you walk on home and forget it? And I'm suggesting that we always stay over here. We always talk about them over there. And we ought to look over here sometimes and say there are all kinds of groups in the community. And I put in an analogy. The Army plays a role in a battle. The Navy, the Marine, the Air Force, all of them have to. Until the citizens see themselves in those roles out there, if somebody gets mad and somebody has to shake the tree, somebody has to raise hell, then somebody else has to take the ball, and they all get together and decide what the roles are and what they're going to do about it. And until the citizens decide that the power in this government, through the democratic process, lies with them, and they get mad and join the neighbor next door and they get mad, and then find out what you do to play your particular role, ain't nothing ever going to happen. And we can come here for 20 more years and ain't nothing going to happen. Bob gave us one of the ideas of citizens' power. Get 20 people, whether they live in a district or not is irrelevant, and go up there and sit in the principal's office. It's their school. They ought to be up there every day. That's the kind of power. Judge?
Well, somebody asked me. I want to say one thing about my role. I cannot give anybody specific advice of what to do about specific cases. My position doesn't allow it, and I can't answer your question. But if you don't get the message of what I said broadly, then you really don't need to ask that
question.
Well,
I get the message, and what you have clarified to me then is once again the administration, or since you're a judge, I can see your administration. In the power of law, then you are removed from the people.
No, that is not the message he's trying to have.
So what I'm saying is, I understand now I have to move through this channel rather than this channel in order to get to him.
Right.
Because he is removed from me as a person now. I have to go through them to get to him.
Right. Actually, that's true.
And
as a matter of fact, you would probably never come before me as a judge just because I have participated in this much.
Quote.
You see, because...
But if school faculties haven't been sensitized, I know that lawyers haven't been sensitized, or judges have
You're
been
You're back
sensitized.
Over here, Carol.
Well, I know.
But
if they're not sensitized to that...
You start over here. You're still talking about this over here.
Now let me answer that question. That may be true that you're not going to hit a judge in San Diego that is sensitized. But the system doesn't stop there. Actually, it improves in the judiciary. It's one area anyway where it improves. It improves as you get farther up. The farther you go up, the better it is. And there's where the law is decided. And there's where, make it possible.
Chalk is next. See, the other two other hands.
Trying to stay on the other side.
Over this side.
I've been on the other side, I think, long enough. I think some people have heard me. Moved to do anything about it, but they have heard. One of the things I want to point out here today is that the part on the other side still remains to be used because it's evidenced by the number of people that are here, Carol, who are not representative of the structure itself, who we're trying to deal with. This bothers me very much because we're approaching the side. When this side downtown comes to that side on that side and say, we need your help this time of year, because all the young people are going in the street. And we're just scared as hell of what they might do to our white citizens, to our white people who they might come in contact with. We would like very much if we could kind of control them in some way. So we want you to work with us and assist us in the parks on Sundays, assist us in the streets with your community group. Well, I think it's a little bit late now for that. I think you've had time to be sensitized. You've had time to hire professional people to deal with it. I'm speaking specifically police department.
specific to the schools, park, recreation department. You've had specific enough time to do these things now. And I say that this your game this year. Because what I'm going to do is, I'll be very frank, I'm moving to the brothers, is I'm going to open the door on you. You know, like they said about the hotshot halfback who thought he could make all the touchdowns without the other 10 players? So one day the two tackles just open up the hole and they charge the hell out of it. You dig it? So I'm just going to open up the hole and let all of the halfbacks in the power structure who've been running the ball until they can do it, just open up, let the whole damn line come through on you with the Benningfields, the Marijuana, and the booze on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's for you cats, man. You're police. Okay? So, there's not going to be any incident to incite. All we got to do is stop doing it. See, because what's been protecting you is not your community relations department, but our community relations department. So, it's your ball.
Yeah.
You take it, baby. Now, on the school, again, at Lincoln High School, legally as it was, or illegal as it is, your move was, somebody moved in to do something. Forget the word legality, who was legal. But I can be very frank with you, specific. Some black cats was going to whoop your police in the tail in that school ground if that had been Kenny Denman and myself. I'm not going to run your interference anymore. I won't be in the middle. I'm going to whoop your head whenever they want to, whatever they want to do. It's open season. That's just being frank. No threat. I'm just stopping. Okay. Now, there's two movies out recently that relate to the whole problem. Both made by white people. Didn't have nothing to do with black people. One was called Wild in the Street. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
Mm-hmm.
This was a young cat.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 16 or 5? The other one was called, just the other night, on television, it's called Internal Security Forces. It's called ISF. It was called Shadow Over the Land. I hope you've seen it. Because it was about white people. What had happened is that the Internal Security Force had to become so strong because of riots on college campuses and internal hassle within the country that they had the checkers checking the checkers and the checkers checking the checkers, and it was just like the Gestapo in Germany.
Yes.
Understand what I'm saying? In other words, you cats were checking each other, because what had happened, there were no black people on the scene. It was the white liberals against white conservatives. And they were tearing your thing up. The head man running the show for the ISF having to be a liberal for the underground, or the black, you know, of the minority movement. But this is coming. It's real. It's just as real as Buck Rogers was funny 2 or 3 years, 10 years ago. Buck Rogers is a real set now. Somebody's flying around out there in space. It's coming. Okay. The reason it's coming is because the power structure will not listen. The mayor should be here. All the members of the city council should be here. All the members of the school board should be here.
Yeah.
Hunchback, Hornback should be here. All these cats should be right here. Dude, this is real. You see, because I look around the room at the power that's here. There's no really power to change here. There's no power. If I'm wrong, somebody correct me in the room, please. I don't.
No, we went over earlier.
Power to change is not here.
Right.
So I cannot make a presentation on what we lack and what we plan to do, because I have a whole folder. I want to make a presentation on the school system. For what? It's irrelevant, you know. Okay. So I really have nothing. But your concern, because the people that you're going to ask to protect you, oh yes, I say white too, because you see, that's one of the things about the movement is white, liberal or not, they can blend in with the crowd when the movement comes. See, they'll build in with the structure, you know. Okay, you're covered. So all I'm saying is that the same people that you're going to go to protect you when something happens, you could go to them now before it happened, and you wouldn't have to be moved on later on. Now, the reason I say to you that things are going to happen, and I don't have to do anything about it. You know what the conspiracy is in the United States today? The conspiracy is called Rainbow. That's the conspiracy. Stumblers.
Yeah.
You cannot control a man with a stumbler. You can talk to a man with alcohol. It's not a Milton on the street who can control a young man on the Benny Fields, not a policeman who can control him. You should know that. And that's your conspiracy. Last summer in San Diego, this was a fact. A cat drove up to the park in South Crest, had a trunk full of stumblers, and he gave them away. And the kids tore the hell out of things that afternoon. This is when no policeman could come to the area. You know what I'm talking about, when you cats are the whole time telling the truth. But it was not what somebody came up and started and said, man, get mad to man. All he had to do was get in Benny's field, because when his inner emotions come out, his subconscious come out, he's already mad. The only thing keeping him down is his conscience is not aroused because he doesn't have something to stimulate. That's your conspiracy in the United States, is Benny's field. Anybody can use them. You don't have to throw no more fire bombs. Just give the cats some Benny's field and they'll take care of the rest.
Yeah,
that's your problem. Okay. I just, the feeling, I'm sorry I took this much time, Carol. The feeling that I have, I feel sorry for white people. I really do. I don't feel sorry for black people anymore. I used to have, you know, because of all the pressures we had, I used to feel sorry for black people. But not anymore. You see, because I've gotten a real attitude of black people. And that attitude is this. Man, what the hell do I care about going to jail? Kill me, MF. Hell, I ain't got nothing no way. I ain't going nowhere. Can't do nothing. What can you do? Take my life. Some guy's gonna whoop some meat and make, whoop some meat and made the other day. And she said, just let him test me. I said, man, you think he really cares about going to jail? He could care less about going to jail and getting the Senate. He don't care. So I feel sorry for white people when the brothers are turning loose on them who don't care. Because there's not going to be any control. In fact, there's not going to be any rhyme or reason for doing it. George, how can they do things like that? Can you understand? No, I can understand them completely. And there's no rhyme or reason. And that's what's going to be so beautiful about this whole revolution, is because somebody failed to listen. It reminds me of the Christians who were having a party when the first world was destroyed. They said it rained 40 days and 40 nights. And they were in a big building. And every time the rain would come up to one floor, these cats would go up to the second floor. They just kept on partying all the way through until they got to the top floor. And then you know what happened. Keep partying, brother.
Carol, my view, is, well, it was in regard to education. I think one of the things that, I'm afraid I have to get back to the circle here, but one of the things that I think that a lot of white people should realize is what's wrong with in the black schools is also wrong in the white schools too. For instance, a good example of that is counselors. The kids don't have in the black schools and in the white schools they don't have. It's either a person they can go to that will be kind of on their side. They don't have anyone unless they happen to have a friendly teacher that happens to relate with kids. And the whole setup, the so-called counseling setup in the system, really is wrong. And I think this is one of the things that the frustrations are felt much more severely at the minority school. And this is just one I have. Frustrations between not having enough teachers to relate to for one thing, and then of course the so-called counseling system that the school districts have is so inadequate. It isn't a counseling system. It's the counselors or advisors are used really as disciplinarians, and if they're really doing their jobs, they're giving the kids hell.
Back over there.
Yeah, I know, I am. But I think this needs to be brought out, and I think what I'm trying to bring out is that as I said, what's wrong in many cases with the black schools is also wrong with the white schools too, and I think we have to examine.
What's the problem, we're willing to make changes.
Yeah,
whites aren't.
I. Right.
And when
beautiful.
We make changes, then the whites say that we are causing riots and everything else.
No,
right.
I think
we've done hung up on this counseling business. We can beat it ourselves, you see. Individually, we can beat it. We can beat this irrelevant counseling because we, the parents, we know it's irrelevant. And so we don't let our kids, most of us, get hung up on what the minority kid and the minority family can't fight. So we can fight it. How do the citizens who haven't been able to fight it? That's where we are.
Yes, I saw, Don and Two, and then we'll end up with over there.
What I just want to react to is what George has said, and he's made, obviously, an invalid point. But I am concerned that perhaps George and maybe some others in the community are going to refuse to assist in preventing this pill problem that he has indicated is so prevalent. We are well aware of everything that he indicated, loads of pills and things coming in. But community involvement is absolutely necessary to stop these things. I don't feel, personally, that police can change without the help of the community. And in part, a load of pills comes in. I don't think allowing it or ignoring the problem on the part of the community really is the answer. I think community people must prevent this kind of thing. Chuck Adams is
allowed it.
Chuck,
we
don't allow it. No, we don't allow it.
Nobody allows it.
Well, but I think that what George is indicating is that it is a problem. And yet, if anybody in this room knew about those pills, nobody told us about them. Instead, so-and-so brought those pills in. Chuck Adams has a proposal for a Stamp Out Stumblers program. Now, I don't know how effective it's been or whether anybody's even supporting it. This is a problem in the community. And I, from my point of view, I think it's very necessary that people do get involved in that also.
Yeah.
But do you understand what he's
saying?
Yeah,
he's not here defending himself.
No. What he's saying, Don, he's not saying that the pills, he's going to distribute the pills and stuff like this. What he's saying
is I know that.
Those that have been participating in stopping certain riots and things going on in that community have gotten tired because of the administration and the power won't listen. Chief Rose won't come here and listen to us. You come here and they don't listen to you when you go back down there.
That's not true.
Well, they haven't done anything is what we're saying. That's
well,
we're tired of talking. So now
okay, let me react on that now. I think Chaka has talked to the chief. Carol has talked to the chief. But I don't know. I don't see anyone else in here at this point. Probably Anderson has. So I don't think there's a closed door. People are listening, and certainly many things are happening.
But Don, I'm using black people in the chief and the police force that was sent to, and I still have the letter at home. And the thing of it was, I was suggesting they use more minority people, and it went through the city manager, went to the chief. The chief wrote back, and his copy of the letter was that we have such good relations with the minority community in Southeast San Diego, we don't need to do this. And
well, he gave us two black sergeants right away. Remember when the minority people asked for it? He really listened.
Yeah, I just don't think he's aware.
See, Don, I'm looking at the problem that you don't have many black people on the police force no more. There's a problem down there, and there's too many of us quitting for us to trust the police anymore or for us to trust anybody because you haven't moved fast enough to stop the problem. Education is a hell of a problem for one. And then we have the problem of trying to socialize with white people for another who keep on saying they want to integrate and they keep segregating. So how do we combat this? The only way you people understand is by violence. It's what you live on for the last 300 years.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, that's, you have one comment here, and Rufus is going to be the ending one. Don, I think what he's saying is that many people in the community who have been extremely cooperative with all the systems, people, or whatever you wish, police department, city administration, county, schools, have in recent times accepted that other reality, that their hope no longer is there. They knew it all the time, but would have faith to continue to work in those areas. And their faith has, simply faith, has dwindled to a zero point or near, and they no longer are going to offer those kinds of services. I think that's what he's saying in a nutshell.
Right.
They just haven't faith any longer and going to act on the lack of that faith. The reality that the system has not responded accordingly. I think that's what he's saying. And there are many in the community who feel that way, as you know. And in the past 2 weeks, two or three of the outstanding leaders who worked with the Lincoln situation, and by that I mean all the whole situation, on TV and in the newspaper and at other places have also said the same thing. And these are men and women who are at the top of the hierarchy in terms of, in quotes, respectability, character and all of that. They simply said no longer will they, for example, tell kids or youngsters or others that they should in fact support police or the school system. And I think this is tragic. I think that's what George is trying to say.
I think that's what he said.
All right.
Just one reason.
All right.
What I'm trying to say is that even though you may have differences with police, quote, per se, I think that it is necessary for citizens to support the law. Now, I'm sure that everybody will come back at some other remark on this, but I do think that in order to do anything effectively, it has to be within the law. If it's outside of the law, you can only expect the confrontation that is going to happen. It's inevitable that police take action as law enforcement officers where there is a violation of law. That's all I'm trying to do.
Well, Don, wait.
I don't think we should talk on Don.
I'm not talking on Don.
This is true, too, but there's a difference between policemen and law and justice. There's a difference between that. I think he's speaking from a policeman's point of view, which is good because this is his job. But there's a whole scope of other things that could be brought in. I don't think we should take the time to discuss right now.
Yeah,
right,
and if God doesn't support justice, if I want to support the law, and that law helping you, I know that kid is really going to get railroaded somewhere or other, someplace. So no justice is going to be given that kid. Why should I support you?
You're not supporting me.
All right, hold up that.
Why should we? Hold
up that. I don't think we are going to resolve that part. I think George made an observation that is so real, so relevant, and so meaningful. Don responded appropriately, as Anderson said. His statement is an observation of truth. Obviously, the local police or any police could not possibly do their job without citizen support. Both of those are true. They're not talking to the same point. But both of those are obviously true. We have come in here, and then you are last, Rufus.
After I said that.
Yeah. Let's get a little exercise, Rufus.
I think everything I've heard here is the most interesting. I hate to get off of this thing here because it's really meaningful, but I feel we're all spinning our wheels while educators and virtuers are making good time elsewhere that affect your lives here on a local basis.
Want to identify yourself, please?
I'm Mark Greenblatt. I'm Executive Secretary of the Imperial Beach Community Action Council. And I've been now on a 2.5-year kick to tell the people here that you have educational programs in which the federal government is spending millions of dollars. But not only millions of dollars to educate the children in specialized types of programs, but they said, you parents, you in the community, get in on this thing over here and help us to run these things. And if educators don't want you, make it known in the area and we'll take back that money. Now, the ESEA programs, and you all know what that is, the Elementary and Educational Secondary Act programs, provides for participation on the part of the community. But the kind of participation that takes place depends on the community, because in their guidelines, the guidelines to the educators, it is stated that the kind of cooperation, the kind of communication that you will have in this thing depends upon the administrators. But the administrators, looking around their area, say the kind of communication I'm going to have is exactly in proportion to what the community will get itself involved in. Now, and so it has been there now for 2.5 years, 3 years I think it is, in which the public has been invited, the parents have been invited, to sit down with administrators and work out meaningful educational, elementary, and secondary act programs. They're to tell them what the community needs, put some input into it, and the administrators are to listen. In making their proposals to the federal government, the administrators must signify in that proposal that they have worked with the public, with the community, and that the community has agreed to the type of proposal they are making for education in that particular district. I think we were coming along very well, particularly in Ward's area. When we first saw this, I had many doubts about his ability or his willingness to cooperate with this program. I have seen a change, but I'm not going to get on that kick right now. Yeah, all right, fine. Now, what I want to call to your attention is, it's always been there, but somebody is working behind the scenes right now at the Washington level. If the House has already passed a bill which nobody knows about, nobody in San Diego has any awareness of the fact that the elementary and Secondary Educational Acts Amendments of 1969 will cut the guts out of the ESEA program. Sure, it's going to extend it for 2 more years. But what it says here, and I want you to listen carefully, there's an amendment that says, the provisions of the committee bill which created a state advisory committee for Title I programs and directed the Commissioner of Education to require local school districts to establish advisory committees for federal programs are deleted. And the House passed that bill. Second one, which affects the community because the CACs are the caps in reality. And so it says, The provisions in existing law which requires local school districts to obtain the concurrence of local community action agencies established under the Economic Opportunity Act and the Title I ESEA program established by such districts is rewritten to require instead that educational programs of OEO and their agencies be coordinated with those of local school districts. And how does it read up to now? It said that the district school programs will be coordinated with the CAPS, and the CAPS would review their programs. And now they say that the CAPS would do a minimum of educational work, will submit their programs to the educational system. Not the other way around. No more will you learn what's in the proposal. There will be little solid books hidden away in the school system, and you aren't going to have any idea what's going on. I have written since Monday, I think, some 80 or 90 letters all over the area here. Some of you have these letters. What are you going to do? It's in the Senate presently. It will be written out as a bill within about a matter of 3 or 4 weeks' time. And if the Senate concurs with the House, okay, forget about the whole meaning educational bit. We might just as well forget about everything there. What we lack is a proper lobby, a poor man's lobby somewhere in Washington, D.C. And you better start thinking from that angle, too, because what happens up there affects you here as much as the things you're talking about now. That's all I want to say.
I hate to have that the last word.
Rupert said the last word. Rupert said the last word. The thing that I really wanted to say, I guess, is about in the same tone that George Stevens was talking, except from another level. Now, there's been all kinds of efforts to make changes, and it was proposed that the citizens here should go to the principal's office. These kinds of things have been attempted, and to the Board of Education. I happen to be identified with another group that I guess could be called a middle class group. There are some people in this room who knows about this, connected with Crawford High School. They have taken a sane approach, a very sober approach. We had a meeting last night.
Are you saying the other is not sane or not a proper? No.
Well, let me just say what I'm about to say. First of all, most principals will cut the visitors to the number that he desires. This is one gimmick that we can't have a 15 and we can't have a 14, this kind of thing. So you're going to have to break a law if you really want to go, 40 or 50, because you're not going to get more than 10 or 12. The other thing that I'm trying to get over to, and listen very carefully, because this is actually what's happening. I saw a man who was almost inconsequential as far as a voice in the community is concerned come out of that lethargy last night into militancy. That's what's happening to everybody. And you don't have to second guess what a guy's militant. Unless you're going to hear sound voices, you're going to hear militant voices, because we are all going to militant camp. That's the only way you get an result. Now, this man is an electrician who has a master's degree, who has never been effective in social organizations, who never wanted to be. But because of my asking, persuading that maybe you should make this presentation, and what a scholarly presentation he made. But you know, when we went to the school board, at the same time they were having this trouble up at San Diego High, and a mother whose son was, San Diego University, a mother whose son was taking over a building at that time, she called and said, "Son, come out." Said, you can't do that." He said, "But mother, you went to the Board of Education, you tried the law, you didn't do anything, so why should I come out? Tell me, you're breaking the law." So all I'm saying, that in an effort to try to preserve the system, we're losing, because we don't hear anything but the militant side. The in-between, we are forcing them into this camp. So this is the kind of thing, and it actually boils down to what George was saying. There ain't no more middle kind of people, because they won't listen. Now, I could call on someone to document what I'm saying about this Crawford incident. Nobody wanted to call in the name. These were just plain people who were sitting down night after night saying that these little bits and pieces that are coming back from their children, the little ugly things that happen in school, we ought to call in a group to investigate. We went to the school board. Would you set up an investigating committee? One of the members made a motion, and then it was carried by the chairman that this investigation would be made. All of a sudden, it turned all the way around. There needs to be. Now, this is the height of
arrogant to assume that you know all the answers, and there's no need for this kind of thing. So what do? You alienate everyone. And we're picking up some strength. We're getting some people who said, you tried to do it the kind of way. And the guys are beginning to get militant and more militant. And one of the guys said last night, I swear it doesn't make any difference whether I lose this $20,000 a year job or not. I am going to be fair. Now, this kind of voice, the silent voice, needs to be heard, and the people need, who are not trying to make this, who are not sensitive to change, need to hear this, because you're going to lose. People are tired of, you know, being inconsequential and insignificant with their children. We're trying to help them. We're trying to make change, but you won't let us, so we have to join them. No other choice.
All right, the last word would be that we've been informed this room will not be available in 2 weeks. We do not know what we'll do about it yet, but you will hear about it through the regular notices. We do not know about 2 weeks from now. You'll hear about it through the channels, the notices. But this room will not be available in 2 weeks.
Now, while everybody's walking out, I want to say something about what we just said here.
While everybody's okay, go ahead.
And that is that we aren't losing the battle because the government is eliminating the facility of the CAC. Now, I'm not criticizing the CAC. I'm saying that so long as the only way you can reach government is through the instrumentalities which it itself creates, you're not going to make it either. It's got to be the citizen themselves exercising their constitutional power. And
nothing else.
Nothing else.
Well, I say let's use everything. Let's put.